Columbus University of Barcelona to tell us about some of his ideas on bishops aligning veterans' friends with them without them.
Okay, thank you very much for the presentation, and I would also like to thank the organizers for inviting me. Okay, this talk is about what this picture shows. So, ways of telling someone directions and accept that as this head indicates, I'm going to be suggesting not in the, in the classical thing, but in the quantum. In this case, these arrows has to be understood as spins. I would be most of the time interested in spin ahead particles, which I will refer just as spins. And this is very important because, as we already know, we need some system which has some intrinsic direction that points out to some into some intrinsic direction, and that's the case of a spin. So it's not just a general tune we have to use for the sport course if we don't have share of its frame between the persons, the two people that want to communicate. We need really spin, right? Okay, I also might have entitled this talk Ariane, Theseus, the Minotaur, and the Quantum Threat. Well, this sounds a little more poetic, right? Okay, we all know the story about these guys. Ariane gave Theseus, I'm not sure how to pronounce it properly, a ball of thread. And she was holding the end of the thread. Theseus went into the labyrinth and let the thread trail behind him. So eventually he met the Minotaur. He killed him, and then just by pulling his way along the thread, he went out of the labyrinth, right? So that's the idea. I mean, of course, you all agree that Theseus somehow was cheating, right? Because, I mean, if you play this game, I mean, anyone can get out of the labyrinth this way, except that probably there is a real mind. But let's think what really a threat means in this context. A threat actually is a metaphor for entanglement. Ariane is holding an end of the thread, and Theseus is holding the other one, is that they have shared entanglement. So they met somehow in the past before he went into the labyrinth. They had a common reference frame. And okay, even though you may say, look, when he went into the labyrinth, maybe he was too busy trying to find this Minotaur, and he couldn't keep a record of the classical reference frame, say that. But still, it seems to me a little bit an unfair advantage for him, as compared to other guys who tried before him to kill him into the fair. Okay, if Ariane had known some quantum mechanics, she had been able to give Theseus a ball of thread in a state such that it wouldn't have been necessary for her to hold the end of the thread. So just by keeping this ball of thread all the way in the labyrinth, Theseus would have been able to get out of it very efficiently. Of course, if the ball of thread is big enough, okay? So this again is a myth, of course, which I'm going to tell you in the second part, right? So let's stop poetry at this point. The outline of the talk is as follows. I will first introduce the problem in a more, say, concrete way. And I will relate this problem to another one, which is also very interesting. The estimation of oncoming gates. Then I will have a first look to the optimal scheme for communicating reference frame. That's exactly the metaphor that I was telling you in the introduction of this talk. After this first glance to the optical scheme, I will like to tell you a little more details about this optimal scheme. In particular, I will tell you what figures of merit you have to choose. I mean, this scheme is optimal because it maximizes some figure of merit, right? So I will talk about this a little bit. I will talk about the preparation of the messenger state, so to say, the analog of this ball of thread, and also about the measurement. What has to do Theseus to retrieve all the information which is contained in the ball of thread throughout the lab? Okay? And finally, I will talk about saving resources. I will talk about this possibility of Theseus getting out of the labyrinth without actually Ariane holding at the end of the process, right? So without using shared entanglement. And I will finally give some summary and conclusions. Okay, so let's start. Since we I'm going to be poetic anymore, let me just draw some satellites, which we call Arnes and Bob. And the problem, or at least the point of view, the first point of view of the problem, is the following. A wishes to communicate a special frame to B by sending N spin and half particles. And the rules of the game tell us that B is allowed to perform generalized measurements. And of course, we assume that there is no classical channel. So what actually Alice has to do is send the appropriate system of spins, the appropriate state to Bohr, and then you measure it, so much, right, and retrieve the information. Okay, I want to insist that we have this in hand, right, because we just want to do without, of course, any pre-reference frame. The idea is precisely to communicate the reference frame, to start. Okay, so the problem which is related to this one, and I just say one of you, two, problem. And I also like to refer to this reverse engineering, because in some sense it is reverse engineering, consists in the following thing. I mean, imagine that you are given a black box that is performs with just one gate, one cubic gate, right, that you actually don't know what it's doing to this qubit. And the aim of the game is to find out what is the hidden as you do limited information in this box. Okay? So the rules are the following. We are allowed to make n calls to this known gate, but we allow ourselves to at least produce as an input state there whatever we want. Right? The important thing is that we just make n calls to this. And of course, again, we want to be able to use generalized measurements to analyze what's coming out of this game, and from there, guess what is the entire transformation. Okay, in this particular case, it is not necessary that we're talking of spins, we can just consider general qubits, right? Because, I mean, in this case, I mean, we assume that we have a reference frame, it's just one person who is explained that, it's not one who is using two different things. All right. So let's go to this first glance to the optimal scheme. Okay, the optimal scheme, in this point of view one, on the satellites of the which again in this use, the modern version of them, has different stages. I mean, first of all, you have to talk about the preparation, okay? And that's how you do it. Alice and Bob mix together, and they prepare, each of them has n spins, and then they prepare this system in a particular state called phi, and it's maximally entangled in the sense that it becomes clear later than you talk. Right? A little different skills. So, you would say at this point that, I mean, we ask how cheating, because, you know, coming together as Ariane and Theseus came before entering the labyrinth, you know, the entanglement of this thing, so we can share an entanglement, and at some point, at this point, you can share a reference frame, all right? And we also can claim that there are some extra n spins that But still, I will stick to this situation and to this scheme and system. Right? Okay. So the second stage of this scheme or protocol, or whatever you want to call it, is the journey. So the two satellites depart journeys, and of course they rotate relative to each other. And I will assume, as said, that for some reason, maybe because the classical computers crashed or something, they don't keep a record of this classical reference frame that they share at the beginning, right? So this is lost. Fortunate accident. Okay, so what I'm doing is the following. I have logged the output of these particles to this spacecraft, this satellite. So whenever it rotates, so it does the quantum system. If the rotation is R and G, then this is the transformation of the state. Okay? Of course, the keeping the entanglement, right? So G, you can think of the order angles or whatever, any parameter that you specify these rotations. Okay? So we can think that keeping up this the reference frame of this guy to specify the component of this R. Of course, it doesn't mean that he not just as an observer, I'm entitled to use protocols. Okay, so the last stage is the communication, the measurement, and the final alignment. Okay, so since they have lost the record along the classical reference frame they share, if they want to get aligned again, because they need to do so for some reason, the only thing Alice can do to tell her orientation is just send this file of the first system, right? So it goes. And then hope that there will be there are generalized measurements that alter a ball point form on now a full set of 20 spins, which I know these operators. And then guess from the outcome he gets of this measurement, get what is the reference frame that she's trying to indicate, and then align it correct. So as to the point of view two of this problem, which is this thing about reverse engineering, if you want, if you wish, I mean, that's the advantage that you can do the three stages in a simple diagram, okay? So here we have the preparation of this maximally entangled state that I'm going to show you later. You do it by taking two N qubits. The N qubits on the top will undergo, well, will go through the gate. So, as I said, the rule of the gate is that you can only apply N times this gate, so this is N. And the other N, which I call B, will just stay there as a spectator, right? So A remaining making as active and B as foreign. Okay, after going through this gate, just collect the whole thing and perform a collective and generalized measurement. It's just, we'll have exactly the same form of mathematical as I told you before. And from that, you can guess what is inside these things, all right? We assume that, of course, these are centers, right? Okay, so these three stages, of course, have direct analog to the stages of the previous point of view. We need to assume operation. This is equivalent to the journey. Remember that N of the spins rotated, the other N did not rotate because they were box scans. And finally, the communication alignment and measurement alignment of the satellites equivalent to say this alignment of this part. Well, actually, the alignment in the field is the analog of guessing what mutation transformation we have here based on the of the other. Okay, but this sort of a scheme is optimal. It was shown sometime ago by Finch and Vidal. They actually, what they did basically is to show what is the structure of this state, what sort of thing you have to choose have to choose to stay five. We have, you know, not an estimation of these unitary operations. Actually, they didn't compute a lot. They just considered a very simple case, n equal 1. Still, they give important information about the systems. Okay? And we use that. Okay, so if we want to go into more detail about these schemes, then we have to talk about the field of merit. I mean, I said these schemes are optimal. In which sense? Okay, they maximize the field of merit. The one I'm considering for the alignment of frames, which is the first point of view of the problem, right? It's just the thing that you can call forever, ever, it doesn't use like forever. But you may do any other thing that nothing will do. Also use the error per axis or whatever. But I just chose this one. So n of a, well, a goes from 1 to 3, so it just labels three orthogonal and unitary vectors. G, gx is a label, which is given to this, actually this defines a special frame, right? So it's given to this special frame by the following rules. Just pick up some fixed reference frame without a reach, and we give it fixed, it's just your observed reference frame, and relative to this, just do some rotation that takes this frame into the one that appears here or here, and this is a label you use, okay? It's a very simple thing. So G, in general, here refers to, say, the frame, the Alice's frame, okay? Whereas GX refers to the guess. After performing some measurement, I will have outcomes of labeled by X, so I will have a guess for the frame, and I just use GX as a label for this frame, right? Okay, so what is this error is just, you know, it's just the sum of the squares of these green things, and of course it's zero if two systems coincide and it's not dramatic. Okay? So actually, as it's usually in this business, we are not just looking at a specific frame or a specific outcome of your measurements, but we do an average over all possible orientation of Alice's frame and also over all possible outcomes of your measurement. So this is an average, right? So PDX of G is the probability of having outcome, say, X, if the orientation of Alice's frame is given by the label G, right? And this J of usually it's the prime measure, the prime measure, it's defined, so you think it's defining a priori probability distribution of frame, this isotropic, I'm sorry, the uniform, okay? And, okay, so the state, as we said, we rotate according to the rotation that Alice experiences, and therefore, this probability, quantum mechanics tell us that it's even better, mechanics tell us that it's even better. Okay? So that's all very simple. So our aim, our goal is to minimize this H of all possible periods and all possible file states. Okay? If we take the second point of view, it's quite often used as a figure of merit fidelity. It is defined in this way. So you assume that within this black box there is unit test information equal to G and G. G again are the order angles, for instance. And then your guess again is something that equal to U of GX. So you just perform this space squared and that's a thing that you have, right? And I guess you all know that this test loop is just a measure of how well this state confers this state in average of all possible states coming into the game. Right? If you just compute the average of the overlap of these two states, average overall time, you can decide something like this or multiple. It's the same. Okay, so it tells you that fidelity 1 means that you have perfect guess. Your guess is actually Okay, again, we average. We do is to average over all possible unitary transformations, maybe heat and gain, and we average over all outflows, some things as before here. And now, again, the aim is maximize the fidelity of the possible POVMs and all possible constraints. Okay, these two figures of merits are related. Okay. So, in the point of view one, we are transmitting the constraints. This follower, which is related to the character of the spin bound representation of SE2, that with gx minus 1g, it just means the label which corresponds to the composition of the rotation g, rgx minus 1 times the rotation rg. Okay? So it's just a relative rotation, one that takes this reference frame into that reference. And if you use this component view, it's relative, and it's also related to this character, very simple way. And from this relation, you can clearly see where it states that these two points of view are actually the same. Same, two faces of the same. And here I show you the range of values these quantities have. And, maximum fidelity is 1, which corresponds to this trace of this skin 1 representation of the 3, and the minimum collateral also corresponds to this. What we want to do, as I said before, is to average all possible t's and all possible x's, because this means the situation that I was describing before. Now, all possible orientations of a frame, or all possible unitary transformations hidden within the gate, and all possible. The aim again is to maximize this chi 1, because maximum chi 1 means maximum fidelity, and again, this definition is just as before. Okay? So, that's the details that I wanted to give you about the figure of merit. Now, let's go again to the preparation. So if we take this point of view 1, which is really reference frame, as I said, we have to come together. Alice and Bob has to come together before we start the journey. So they have to prepare exactly this. This is my claim, right? As you see, it is an entangled state in each one of these irreducible representations. Okay? We can think of this state that the two states are referred to both reference. I mean, you know, they're together, so just to make sure the same reference. Okay, so if you have the second point of view, we have this stage, just highlighted here, take the line and so on, and you again prepare the same, exactly the same state, right? Where now A and B, of course, refers to the, what they call active qubits and boring qubits, okay? The second part of the second stage is the journey. So this guy starts to rotate relative to the ball, blah, blah, blah. And this is a transformation that the state finds in the world. So these guys, this first guy rotate with this thing. Whereas, since I'm choosing this presentation I'm choosing this reference frame, the one Bob has. It doesn't rotate at all, right? So it's just identity. It doesn't mean that he, of course, knows about these locations and these states, but I, as an observer, can use whatever reference frame I use. So I'd rather write everything referred to box. Okay? So it's not easy. Therefore, I have to continue identity. Right? The equivalent to the journey for this second point of view is exactly the same as before. So this for qubits goes in transformation. It's the part A of the system. And the second part B simply doesn't change the model. Okay? And that comes really we come to the measurement. And what I claim is that the optimal measurement has these four. So the elements of the POVM can be obtained just like 15 minutes of judicial operator, which has rank 1, just for 5 is given here. And this is normal, like in a convenient way, it's not from the rest to 1, it's a nice and convenient way. Remember that in J is the dimension of representation J, I don't know what I say, if I can remember what I say now, in J is the dimension of J representation, 2J times 1. And we simply, what we do is just rotate the first units in this state in some given directions, generally Tx. And that's it. And this is a POVM that actually Bob can have and can apply to the system because of this stage already. All those things that were Alice's with Alice now have been sent to Bob. So this is a thing that you can do already. Okay, about the product, about the point of view, it's exactly the same, so it's a different way to set it. Right? So just a comment on the measurements. Is that a particular instance of regional expression? I also should say maybe that this, the sum of this Cx is equal to 1. It's a condition that you would have to require in order to have a real PVM, so that the sum of the all these operators is identity. So a particular sample is given by a continuous PVM, but this particular continuous PVM. Right? So what you do is you now iterate over all the possible. Values of the other angles, and this is continuous PVM of the right? Again, this is the expression for fire. Okay. And one can prove that this is optimal. Now, I don't want to give many details, but I want to give a few things. A few details that I think are necessary to understand before we move tonight. Okay, we are all true. Okay. We all know that when we have an purity states, they belong to this representation and doesn't do it. And we know that there is this threshold in series that says that these product representations can be composed into a direct sum of the reducible representation J. But they show up a number of times, which is in general greater than 1, except for the highest possible, except for the representation which has the highest possible spin. This is exactly the number of times if each individual representation show up in this threshold in series, okay? And I just like you to know that, as I said, Nj is the number of times the representation shows up. It's 1 for the maximum possible value of the spin, which is number 2. But for all the rest, the values, it always happens that the number of times each individual representation shows up here is greater, is larger than the dimension of the representation itself. It's not a place to go. Another technical detail that I like to mention is that if you look at the paper by Finjan and Bell, chief of this structure of electronic state, which they claim is that, okay, the coefficients A, G has to be fixed to reinforce optimality. And this condition on these coefficients, that they have to be positive, and they have to, because the sum of all possible j, the sum of a squared of all possible j is equal to 1. So, as you see, they use all this inducible representation, that all this equivalent representation, this equivalent series, okay? So that's summing of all possible. Of all these multiplicity, alpha labels and multiplicity of these representations. And so it's a maximum entangled state in much either much bigger filler space. Okay? However, one can show that, you know, you just let this state and take the component which has a spin J and let it and act on it by all possible transformations that we have. And what we see it does is that all these states belong to a substrate which has dimension dj rather than the whole dimension of this thing which is nj times dj. So it means that we can just change the basis when we have these his legal composition, direct legal composition of his father, in such a way that all these states, the large state, is just one useful representation. And that's exactly what I did. If you remember, when I told you what was the optimal aesthetic in Bernini alpha here, just to each the useful representation of J1. Okay? So this is very second. This is completely general. There's no problem on that because of this thing, just this point of view. Okay, so now, with all this in hand, you can go and just find out what are the A's that maximize the whatever, the fidelity or whatever you want to put, just concentrate this on this quantity, so the fidelity and the error, and this is the answer. And you can also get the maximum value, this quantity, which will give you maximum fidelity and the minimum error, and you see that this is the answer. And I want to insist that this is exact. It seems to be quite remarkable because this is a rather sophisticated problem and still you can give an answer which is exact. It falls for any n, any number of this one, right? Okay, as I said, I don't want to go into details, but just let me mention many unions of the group. I'll be happy to show you in the discussion if someone is interested. They are very simple. Just use Schur lemma, clever way of using the Schwarzschild quality as being done into this thing. And just by using Schur's lemma and Schwarzschild quality conveniently, in the proper way, we end up having an upper bound for this quantity, which is of the form 1 plus some quadratic form, where this A is precisely these coefficients. So M is a square matrix. You can immediately see that this square matrix is three diagonal. And then it has, it's very easy to find the maximum possible value of this quantum form, just look for the highest eigenvalue of M. Because remember, these A's are normalized in such a way that they are squares, but that's 1. So since they sum up to 1, this is, if you just look for the highest eigenvalue, right? So this is very easy. I mean, this means that you have to be able to analyze M, but this is very easy to escape because it's still there, I don't know. And the only thing you have to do is to find the characteristic polynomial, which is find recursive relations for characteristic polynomials corresponding to different matrices, the size of these matrices of order 10 and n. And you can immediately see that these recursion relations are those of the Chebyshev polynomials. So, you know, since we all know that the zeros of the Chebyshev polynomials have a very simple expression in terms of fractions of pi, of sinus of fractions of pi, I mean, it's not surprising that we end up with such a simple expression, that's right. And the only, I mean, the last step that we have to ensure is that we saturate this bound, and this we can show it by picking up a continuous pure lemma, just so to show up to you before, right? Show to you before. Okay, so that's the thing. And this, of course, is just the eigenvectors corresponding to, as the eigenvector corresponding to maximum value, so that's very easy to find. So it's all pretty simple. Although this expression is exact, I think it's very interesting to have a large n expansion for this quantity, and that's what I'm doing here, right? It's trivial. So this expansion implies this expansion for the error of fidelity, and as you see, the error now is vanishing quadratically in 1 over n, and all of you reach, if you take the point of view of this, you can have this reverse engineering thing. Fidelity is approaching 1 is 1 over n squared. And this is quite a sense that was known before, right? Because the error in the limiting reference frame previous to this thing was known to be of the form 1 over n syntactically. Now she can show it with 1 over n squared, right? And the same with this. Okay. But again, as I said at the beginning, you may claim that this is somehow cheating, using technology in a way that is unfair to use. Okay, so I'm going to talk about saving resources now. So what I want to do is the following. I want to ask myself the question whether it is possible to get rid of this entanglement, this shared entanglement between the two parties, if it's possible to get rid of this extra curious or space between these things to move. And the answer is yes. We can cut down the number of the spins when we can. We don't need shared entanglement if we don't want to, and still attain the same fidelity if you wish it or whatever. But now the thing is that only asymptotic. Exactly more. Not for any n, because more n is a small difference, but large n, yet we're going to get the same basically fidelity or error. How is this possible? Okay, to understand this a little bit, I think we have to remember, recall again this as well in the right? So now I'm just considering the n spins which Alex has. I'm not even thinking of considering spins in a ball or entanglement at all, but this n spins still belong to this representation, and of course the most general state that can have for these things is the one in this box, where for the F to include the repeatment in the equivalent representation of the allowance. It is not difficult again to show that if you now apply all possible unitary transformations on this state, you will realize that these states belong at most to DJ representations of not to NJ, which is a much larger number, but only to this DJ. Okay? And this is not very difficult to show. You just have to find vectors which are orthogonal to all these states, and you can find DJ times NJ minus DJ of them. And therefore, this telling you that this is certainly true. Okay? So there is no need to include in the sum over alpha all the NJ representations, you simply take the first DJ. Okay, so now, we don't want to have this state. I say I don't want to have spins from ball or shared entanglement, so I have to replace this state for something. So I go from this capital phi to this low-case phi. And what I'll do is the following. Now we have these new things, is really the equivalent multiplicity of the irreducible representations. And we know that these takes as many values as these takes, because now this runs of DJ possible values as exactly as these M runs. And of course, this suggests this is a product of representation J times, to say, state that belongs to this multiplicity representation. Therefore, what we can do is just assign to each one of these n a unique alpha, just by introducing one to one map between the numbers minus j up to j into the numbers 1 and j, and that's it. Okay? So this tangles these two degrees of freedom, and we have exactly formally the same expression. And the amount of entanglement, as what I just mentioned to you, is concerned, is the same. Okay. It is important to realize that this space, which is this multiplicity space, does not rotate. It's not the same transform and linear transformation, so that in a scalar index. Therefore, when you are in the journey and you rotate your states, we had this before, right? Where these were referring to both. Now what we have instead of this identity of the B is just this identity over alpha substrate. So again, formula is the same thing. Okay? There's no difference whatsoever. And to the measurement, more of the same. Therefore, you know, there's a complete analogy. Formally, they are the same thing. Okay, except for the detail. The detail is that for the maximum possible value of J, which is n over 2, we only have one representation. the representation which has the maximum possible speed on its so that one symmetric representation, okay? And therefore, we don't have DJ of that in general, JS. Therefore, and I cannot actually write this expression, all right? But we can write something very similar for the values of J, which are smaller than N. So what do we have to do with this little subspace, which corresponds to the highest possible spin? Okay, then what we can do is we look at the null paper, class where we were interested in what happens when there are. But you don't take care, if you don't use these repeated representations, and you know from this paper that the best state you can have is precisely that. This is J and this is N. So you can have the maximum possible value of N. And then you just put some coefficient and try to fit these coefficients in the way that you are as good as you can. All right, the same for the measurement, and don't do it again. And what I'm saying is that you just do this game, just try not to maximize for this, try to find the maximum fidelity, minimal error, this sort of states, you can see in a moment. And what you see is that although this scheme is not optimal, still in the limit, in the asymptotic limit when n is very large, it separates the bond. So if you compute this thing, you will get exactly the same sort of you got for the optimal guess, so the same error and the same fidelity. And that's not very surprising if you think about it, because again, we are using, so to say, the same amount of entanglement, as I showed to you, except for a little piece of my Hilbert space. As n goes to infinity, the dimension of the highest spin representation is vanishing with respect to the dimension of the rest of the Hilbert space. Very fast. Therefore, you can certainly expect that this small thing will not change drastically the minimal error or the maximum fit. That's exactly what happens. Okay, this is also some work that Chirivella, who's next in the talk show about it, he will probably give you another interpretation and maybe some more details. Okay, so let's just come to the summary and conclusions. First of all, I just like to emphasize that, at least from this very theoretical point of view, mathematical point of view, it seems clear that quantum systems can indeed transmit a special preference frame and can be used to do this reverse engineering task I was mentioning to you. And this is now since long ago. And I have shown to you that actually these two things are different faces of the same problem. I have presented what is the optimal scheme, or optimal scheme, things. And it is correct, I didn't really talk or said anything about it, but you can see the presentation behind it, the scheme, the measurements, and so forth. We can claim that we need additional resources, then we as Theseus are cheating. Okay, fine with me, we have this n extra speed, we have this shared entanglement. But there is an economy class scheme where, again, we have variance, we have now no shared entanglement, okay, so no extra spins, but instead we use this equivalent reusable representations, and this scheme still is optimal asymptotic, which is very good. Right. We have explained why this scheme is so good, and my explanation is that it uses almost the same amount of entanglement of the optimal scheme, but of course it correlates different degrees of freedom. Okay. And finally, I would mention that, of course, if we were using atomic angular momentum for transmission of atoms in general, the way former speaker did, we wouldn't have these equivalent representations, which would imply that it would be impossible for us to to use this economic glass to escape the human world, so to be quiet. This equivalent is an action. In that case, we have only two options. Either we cheat as physios or do something a little more, a little less efficient. It's not an option. And just a few future directions in this, it's, you know, something that just occurred to me. It's that we still have to find what is the optimal, they call economy class scheme, right? So if you don't have entanglement, if you don't have an extra n qubits, what is the optimal thing? The scheme I call economy class in this presentation is not optimal, right? I want to insist it's only optimal as soon as you have small values of n, it's optimal. And it is easy to find things which do much better, all right? But as far as I know, it is not which is the real optimal scheme. It's, you know, maybe interesting to know. Then I think it is important also to try to find schemes which are local, and maybe they have a huge classical communication for these two problems I presented to you, or these two phases of problems. And this is, I think, particularly interesting to use for logic and everything. I'm pretty sure that if you want to find local schemes, you will definitely need to use classical communication a lot, right? It's not just by using fixed measurements, you will do much at all. I think it would be also interesting to extend this, all these things to qubits. You know, say if you have a gate which acts on qubits, it's the best way you can estimate that. This is, as far as I know, unknown, and it would be a very interesting thing. And maybe it would be also interesting to see what happens with mixed state, because actually in practice it's very difficult to find real pure state. Therefore, you know, just considering mixed state which has very high purity, how all these changes, I think it's also interesting question. And that's it. Thank you very much for your attention.
Any questions?
Of the summer?
Yes. But I'm sorry, I'm a little lost.
Let's see if I manage to... Yes.
So in the case when you don't use the shared antenna, how much is being communicated with the palace tonight? Because there's a statement that you call it different degrees of freedom. So in the first case, it looks like there's n. So in the case with n, first you said it obviously. It looks like there are n spins on either side, n spins on block side, and then the n spins are sent from Alex and block. So 2 to the power n dimensions is communicated. And in the second case, how is the space being communicated from Alex and block? Is it 2 to the n dimensions, or it's not? Because I don't understand what it means by how these different degrees of freedom.
Well, I think I showed to you. First of all, remember that n of these spins do nothing with them, right? So it's just stay there as a spectator, right? These are the balls. Oops, it's good. That's the first thing. So what I just showed to you, I believe, is that the degree of freedom are the same, all right? Alpha, which counts the multiplicity of the principal representation, at most takes the same number of values as n. Therefore, if you count the degrees of freedom, it has to be the same. You know what I mean? Alpha, let me show it. And I don't know whether this is exactly what you asked.
In other words, I'm not very sure if you use this.
Except for some details, I said to you, of course. But I mean, at this stage, here I show to you that, not, where is it? I'm sorry. Here it is. So I'm just replacing this by this. I showed to you that there are as many degrees of freedom here as there are here. So the balance is the same.
It still remains spins. The quick answer to your question is that it's still sending in spins.
Oh, of course, it's still sending in spins.
It's still sending in spins, but like, so now there is this other box, and presumably it's still the same thing. As the same difference, you know, so if you know it's from the other one, because you're saying that it happened, it's.
I don't understand.
So you can get it all on Alice's side to begin with, and then you send it all over that box.
Yeah.
So it's all on top.
Yeah. That's right.
No, it's just still in spin, because all the entanglement is in the M spin. Mm-hmm. It's just you're using different freedom of the M spin.
That's right.
And in the case, you're not using all the degrees of freedom, but you're sending all. So you can't.
Well, I mean. Let's see. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, if you have two N spins, actually you have a lot more degrees of freedom. That's true. But only a few of them are really useful for communicating a frame. That's also what I showed to you. I mean, you in principle could think that the optimal signal state would be a combination, you know, something like an entangled state over all possible appearances of irreducible representations and blah, blah, blah. But in practice, most of this filter space is useless, because when you look at the action of the group, okay, what you get is that the action of the group takes this signal state to a subspace which has a lot less dimension. Therefore, you know, the effective degrees of freedom are reduced a lot. Right.
Okay, I think it comes from some differences in definition of the
Well, maybe the name is a freedom is not
because I'm asking this question just because with entanglement, I would say with n means of entanglement and with n cumulative communication, you can communicate an equivalent of two n cumulative information if the sender knows the same.
But this is a very specific information I'm sending. You know, it's not just information. It's the information required to align frames. It's just, I mean, you know, it's, I agree. I mean, if you want to send, say, information in general, I would probably agree with you that provided we have some reference frame that we share, we could take a lot of these reducible representations, a lot bigger paper space, and I'm sure that we could encode a lot more information. But when you restrict this information to the one that is required to align frames, you know, it happens that most of these degrees of freedom are useless information.
But that's what I wanted to just mention, is that there's a different, there's an argument saying if you can do anything without entanglement, just sending a single frame, given entanglement and given, like, basically, if you want to send two N qubits over, you can use N qubit communication and N emission and N to do the same thing. But it's not the same type of coming. That's why.
I think so. It's a different sort of counting. You just have to count the information in a different way. You know, it's very specific information. I believe. I mean, that's my famous explanation.
Right. Yes. Very general question. So what's not really clear to me is why, what the applications are of these groups.
I wish I knew. No idea. I mean, this is a very theoretical sort of thing. I agree with you entirely. I mean, I cannot. I mean, of course. I mean, we can. Sorry.
What?
I have no idea. To be honest, I mean, I think. For this to be useful, take ages if it's ever useful for anything. But I think it's important. I mean, my attitude is the following. I think this sort of theoretical problem which I'm interested in for, from the quantum information point of view, you know, just trying to see how much information of this particular type you can send for a quantum channel. I think that by itself is interesting. Of course, if you're talking about applications, at the moment, we cannot think a single one. I'm sorry to say.
Because it's going to be used in some cryptographic sense.
Well, these things maybe can be used in cryptography, but I don't know at the moment of any real application.
No, I have certain boring technical question. That's very simple thing. Your DJ, is that just 2J plus 1?
Yes, sorry, just shorthand for this.
Your definition of fidelity, could you go back to that?
The definition of fidelity, let me. Maybe. This one here.
Yeah. Okay. So that is within you there. So that's Pauli. That's the little U in there is the relation to Pauli representation.
That's right. That's correct. So it is not a higher dimensional representation. It's just the 2x2 matrix representation of the interview.
Okay. And then, so maybe just sort of slightly the general question then. I mean, so you look at two things in there and they give you exactly the same optimal state. But do you kind of feel, I mean, have you considered any other things of merit? I mean,
No, to be honest. We have certainly considered the square error per axis, but it's just, again, something related to this character one, thing, this character of the spin one representation. Just that you have a different relation, but it's the same thing. And that's what we have been looking at. I think these are the most sensitive things for many to consider. Now, fidelity is widely used in this business about creating these things. And the whole level error is not different from what I just said. This square error per axis is also very easily. We have not considered any other. It's just as I said, and that's why I talked about figure of merit. To me, a scheme is optimal if it maximizes the figure of merit. Given a set of rules, of course, I mean, you change the rules. And this, that's why I said that maybe you are cheating when you're including, share of the time or things like that. You may think that. But it's not, it depends on your point of view.
So but it's not that the scheme is not optimal, but in the sense that it does not achieve that maximum.
Right? That's right. It only achieves the maximum total.
But in both cases, and first of all, the theory to achieve the
No. No. In the optimal scheme, for any n, you have an answer, which is even in terms of this cosine of pi over n or whatever, right? And this is optimal for any single n, from 1 to infinity, right?
And to get to 1, you get n, what has the whole
thing? Oh, that's right. That's a different point. I mean, if you want to get fidelity 1, of course, you have to take an infinite number of spins. There's no other way. So just in the classical limit to say you are getting fidelity 1,
If
for you optimality means fidelity 1, it's of course both cases. But to me, fidelity means given a number of spins, a number of qubits, get as much, I mean, do it as well as you can, right? So the thing is, if you have n qubits, and you stick to your rules, and you maximize the fidelity, it turns out to be 0.9 when that one. But still, what you can show is that as n goes to infinity, fidelity goes to 1, or if you reach n goes to 0. So in this sense, in the classical limit, achieve perfect communication.
Yes.
So two comments. First is just in response to Frank's question about cryptography. I think these might be useful if your goal is to establish a secret reference frame, a private reference frame between two people. Then you can send these direction indicator states and detect eavesdropping with the quantum states. And so you could look for eavesdropping trying to find directional information about the states you're sending. You could do this just using the regular key distribution, set up a possible key, and then rotate your direction indicator by some amount, which you describe by your possible key, and then the other person unrotates it. But this kind of state might be more efficient, ultimately, for distributing secret reference frames. And the second comment I had was the two schemes you talked about. In the first scheme, you have a quantum channel from Alice to Bob, and Bob back to Alice. So she sends, maybe they start together. So if you imagine they start far apart, then they can establish their entanglement, and then they can drift in terms of the rotation, and they have that quantum channel of sending entanglement back. But in the second scheme, you can eliminate the first quantum channel. You just have Bob sending information back to Alice, and it's just as good. So it seems to me, well, almost as good, it seems to me that there's probably, you can probably do just as well with a different kind of resource, which is a quantum channel from Alice to Bob, and then only a classical channel from Bob back to Alice. And the way you do it is, you imagine Alice sending Bob some entanglement, so they establish entanglement, and then instead of Bob fixing the spins to the axis of the spaceship, he isolates them so that they don't rotate at all. And so his ship can rotate, but the spins don't. And then later he does a measurement on them in this optimal, using this optimal POEM, and he thereby collapses Alice's half to a signal state. And then he tells her what result he got in this measurement. And then Alice knows, okay, that direction corresponds to what Bob describes as this Euler angle relative to his frame. So I know to realign my frame. And my guess is that using your mathematics, you can show that that scheme also goes as
best. So it's like, I like to call this scheme against the learning problem for obvious reasons. So in a way, what you're saying is the opposite, right? So it's like a sort of teleportation, sorry. In a way. So
it's remote state preparation. Not teleportation. But interestingly, the basic idea there of distributing entanglement and then measuring it is actually given by Terry from way back.
Okay, I think we should call it there around a few minutes then. Thanks again. For our last talk, for lunch, we have Jujitsu Dump, who is